Hello, and welcome to the Influence Change at Work show. I'm your host, Heather Stagel, founder and change facilitator at Inclaria, where you can accelerate your influence so you can overcome obstacles to change and make a bigger impact in your workplace. Today, my guest is Tim Gardner, who joins the show to share what to do when change requires a layoff. Tim recently retired as Director of Organizational Effectiveness at Kimberly-Clark Corporation in Roswell, Georgia. After a few years in engineering roles with Scott Paper, he became involved in two major startups of new facilities, which he talked about last time he was on the show. Make sure you go check out episode 20. But following a merger with Kimberly-Clark in 2000, he served as HR manager at two manufacturing facilities for a few years before joining corporate in his most recent role. As Director of Organizational Effectiveness, he supported various organizational changes in structure and process improvement and watched over or managed a number of layoffs, as you'll hear today. So, Tim, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Heather. It's good to be talking to you again.
So one of the reasons that I wanted to have this conversation is because inevitably in my Fundamentals of Influencing Change at Work class, it's a 3-day class where we go through what are all the different elements of how do you influence change. It inevitably comes up that somebody's project is going to result in some kind of layoff, reduction in force, something like that, or people are afraid that that's going to happen. And so I wanted to bring in someone who's had some experience with that and hear how do we actually do that when you have a layoff involved in change.
Great.
So just to give some background, what are some of the change initiatives that you've been part of that required some kind of reduction in force or layoff?
Yeah, well, there have been two that were fairly significant in the last 7 or so years. We used to have a portion of our business that was in the healthcare industry. So Kimberly-Clark Healthcare was spun off a few years ago and became its own entity and as Halyard, known at the time as Halyard Health. Okay. It was a good 15 to 20% of the company, which means that all of the central functions, in addition to the employees that were directly involved with healthcare now becoming part of the healthcare business, all of our central functions like IT, finance, HR, legal, would have to downsize as well because they are now serving a smaller corporation in Kimberly-Clark. In some cases, their roles translated over into the healthcare business, but not anywhere near its entirety. Yeah. We had to, for example, support them for a couple of years with IT services and financial services till they could get their own IT and finance solutions in place. So we had a situation where we needed to reduce our costs, but we also had about a 1 or 2 year window where we were acting as a provider of services to Halyard Health. So that's the one situation that was probably most significant. And then most recently in 2018, in early 2018, Kimberly-Clark announced a major initiative to change its footprint in manufacturing, in support functions. It was a change in operation strategy that would drive a reduction in force as well. So it wasn't a cost cutting, we have to let people go. It was a design strategy change that led to the reduction.
Yeah, so it sounds like there's a number of different initiatives that might result in something like this. So change in strategy or mergers and acquisitions, yep. Divestiture, like you said, process improvements can also end up in, yep. in something like this. So, okay. So the question that always comes up is, when do you actually tell people? So if you know this is going to happen, when do you tell people? And how do you tell people without starting a panic throughout the company?
Yeah. So in the case of the spinoff, you know, when it was announced that we were going to have the healthcare business spinoff, we concurrently announced that that would involve changes elsewhere in the organization, but that it would take a number of months to determine what those are. So at some point, you know, it's an obvious thing that will have to happen. So you don't just pretend it's not or say, well, we haven't decided yet. We'll talk about it later. We talked about it right up front. And tried to give some level of range, right? So that people could at least know, you know, what type of jobs might be impacted, and an idea of how far down the road. You know, nothing would be effective immediately the day of the day that the actual spinoff, for example. And it was a year or so leading up just to prepare for that. So in those cases, we certainly tried to be as upfront as possible with whatever we knew, which is really frustrating for a lot of people, right? Because sometimes they're convinced you know with more certainty than you're giving them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they say, we'd like to, you know, at the next town hall, can you give us an update? And the update is, we're still in the process of deciding, you know, exactly what to do. Here's the date where we expect to know more. In the most recent case, it was a global restructuring. So things were happening in our operations all around the world. It had to be kept very quiet until we could make a public announcement because of the shareholders. You know, we can't let employees know ahead of the shareholders all the things that might happen. So a great deal of effort was put into preparing those communications, making sure that we could be, again, as straightforward and open with the employees as we would be permitted based on even local regulations and laws, right? So we had to kind of account for what you could say and not say based on union or other collective bargaining kind of situations. But we, you know, our general intent is to let people know at the earliest possible time to let them know.
Even if it's not complete information about who and when and all that.
Right, just right.
That it's possibly going to happen.
Yep, what's the scope and, you know, and when do we think we will be able to give you more direct information and whether or not when you might know whether this would be a direct impact to you personally.
Okay. And what's the impact on morale on something like that? You know, I think that every change agent's fear is we tell them everybody this news and, you know, half the people jump ship or, you know, start to panic or, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the key things that I always try to drive in these situations was to say, remember that your audience is the retained employees. We want to do everything we can to care for and really treat with great respect those people who are going to end up leaving. But at the same time, you want some level of excitement in the employees who are going to be retained, which is the largest part of the population. So that they can help drive, so they can help drive the new strategy, right? So because you want them excited about these choices that you made, it's good that we're spinning off healthcare because it really had become less of our core, and it was a good enough business to stand on its own. So you know, and you look at Kimberly-Clark as a consumer products company. Healthcare is adjacent, right? It's not exactly the same. So it was time to say, let's spin out of that. And what that meant is that capital would be more available to other parts of the business that would be looking forward to reinvesting in some of the paper machines and some of the converting equipment or some new business ideas. So we really try to impact morale as positively as possible. Yes, we respect the fact that some of your peers are going to be leaving, but right now, we've got work to do to help ensure the success of the company in the long term. So we really tried to focus the messaging on, you know, yes, some employees are going to be impacted, but here's what it means for all of us that will still be here.
Okay, so I'm hearing that a core part of the communication, as usual, is the why. Like, why are we really doing this?
Absolutely.
Into the future. But it seems like it would be a little bit difficult to strike that balance because it's not all sunshine and roses, you know, when people are losing their jobs. So, you know, how do you manage that?
Yeah. So in the U.S. in particular, people are pretty familiar with because we're very public about all of our policies and practices. So there's a standard severance package that's pretty much at the market standard for our industry. And so people are familiar with it. They know, you know, or if they think they're going to be impacted and they want to know what will happen to people who are impacted, we tell them, you know, we'll say, well, we have our standard policy. This is where you can go look at it. And if you need more details, you can see your HR rep who'll tell you. So there's things like that. We prepare a fairly extensive Q&A kind of FAQ kind of document because we know people are going to ask whether there'll be a voluntary effort, whether whether I can be reemployed, how soon can I be reemployed if I'm let go? In the meantime, can I be looking for jobs within the company? You know, those kind of questions. So we do a good job of trying to anticipate all of the questions that people would have, and try and even within those answers, remind them this will affect approximately X percent of our employees. You know, should you be in the affected group, this is the process we'll be following. But there are also going to be some changes in the organization that may represent new jobs, right? So we try and make sure that we're realistic and honest about that. Where it gets more difficult is where full locations might be at risk, right? So if we say we're going to close X manufacturing positions globally and Y of those will be in the U.S., well, then all of a sudden the multiple locations I want to go, well, who is it? Well, we're not prepared to announce that yet. And there's, you know, when it's everybody, but then really that's the kind of situation you're talking about. It's the worst situation. You just have to be prepared specifically for all the things that might happen at that location and what you might be able to do for that.
So I'm hearing providing people with as much certainty as you possibly can in that scenario, even though they might not know that it's them, but if it happens to them, they at least know what the process is.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Exactly. And that's a little more difficult in other regions. Some regions are much more notify and exit the same day. And in the U.S. for us, for Kimberly-Clark, they tend to be more, well, how much notice can we give people and expect them to still perform well? And how can we minimize that anxiety level of okay, we're going to tell you, but you're going to have this much time before you actually leave.
Okay. So what are some of the concrete programs that make this a little bit easier on people?
Yeah, there's a few things that we tried to do, I think, and we're pretty successful at. One of which was make sure that our corporate website, our internal corporate website, would have a very specific set of links to the kind of things that people want to know more about. Where are we with this? So the CEO might be updating people on a once a month basis. There would be obviously the FAQ that I talked about earlier. You know, here's what's going to happen. Here's what happens if you're impacted. You know, you're likely going to know this much in advance, and you'll have this many weeks before you'll actually be exiting. And then here's what we do for you, you know, as a severed employee. So we provide all that information in a central location, and we had our communications professionals really tied into that and making sure that HR and communications were working very closely together. So that's one aspect. Another aspect that was maybe unique to Kimberly-Clark is the CEO there wrote a blog every week for about the last 8 years. Every Monday, there was a new blog that would go up. And in times like this, he would write specifically about what the issues are and what the concerns are and, you know, how it is unfortunate that there will be employees impacted. And you know, in the history of a 150-year-old company, this is not the first time these things have happened. And it takes a lot to reinvent and reinvent and reinvent. And sometimes there's some loss of work as a result of that. So he did a really good job of kind of keeping people updated and connected just through his weekly blog. And then the other thing we do is really reach out to managerial influencers, people that we know are good at sending messages that have the integrity and the background to that people respect when they're speaking. They truly are telling them exactly what they know. And they're telling it in a way that's compassionate and caring and focused on the future.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask you, how do you equip managers for that situation? And it sounds like you maybe reach out to some specific managers, like you just said, that have that kind of influence and trust. Yeah. But what about everybody else?
Yeah, so the HR team also gets, you know, they get all of the information that we can possibly provide them. And we set up, so I was part of a core team that had weekly two-hour calls. And the purpose of that was to get feedback from the various HR directors around the globe And when we do two meetings, we'd have to do one late at night and then do one midday to get input. It's like, what more do people need to know, right? So we've told them this much. What's your response like? Is there any concerns in your area? And frequently we would get back, nope, everything, people understand it. Of course, they're not happy, but you know, there's nothing more we can tell them at this point. Or we get, hey, there's a lot of rumors about this location or that location. Is there anything we can do to manage the rumors of those particular issues? And sometimes you can. We couldn't really go to any one location and say, don't worry, you're not one of them, right? But at the same time, managers at those locations know what their budgets are. They know what the plans are for their particular product lines. And they could say the right things to just say, hey, folks, let's just focus on being safe, doing the operation. We'll know more at the right time. But we've continued to deliver the right costs and the right quality. And so we feel confident that our mill will continue on. They might be right or they might be wrong, but it's still an honest bet. I mean, they don't know. They don't know at that level. So we equip the managers everywhere the best we can. I mentioned some key influencers first, but we also have what we call a leadership toolbox at our intranet site that anybody who is a manager has access to. And they could go there for updates as well and key messaging and some of that kind of stuff. But there were always a few people that we equipped with kind of some leadership. They just had that technique and the ability to get out there with messages that people would feel confident in.
Okay. And were there any measures or indicators that you were watching to see how well is this going? Pulse checks, something like that?
Yeah. So we try to not overdo the pulse checks. Kimberly-Clark does routinely an engagement survey every 2 years. And then at about the 12 to 18 month mark, there's usually a round of pulse checks that take place. Between like 6 and 18 months that are on the request of individual managers. But we also try and minimize that because people just get tired of being asked, are you happy here? And, you know, is there anything we can do differently? So we really did rely on these touch points of our weekly meetings with HR leadership to say, hey, what are you hearing? What are you seeing? We worked really closely with the recruiting team because at the time, when you're going through something like this, you want to minimize hiring. You know, as employees, you know, I'm working in this job in IT and I just see we just hired 3 new engineers and I'm an engineer. Does that mean I'm safe? You know, and we don't want people to speculate on that stuff. So we really try to work closely with recruiting and then HR with the businesses to say, what can you hold back on until we get through all of our decisions around what the changes are going to be and what the reductions are going to be and so on. So that internal channel of HR becomes pretty critical.
Now, as someone is trying to embark on a project like this, what are some of the watchouts that you might warn them about?
Well, there's actually quite a few. So let me think about I think the top three that I find. And one is related to this recruitment piece. There would be a notion that people would have, and rightfully so, that if a job is posted at our career site, that must be a good job going forward. So, you know, if I have a doubt about whether my job is going to be here, now might be a time for me to actively look at other roles. And for the most part, they'd probably be correct. But, you know, in the time period between when you announce a global restructuring and then you actually start to the activities involved, there's still some design work going on. So in the IT world is, how much are we going to move from our U.S. location to our Czech Republic location? How much work from finance is going to move from a U.S. location to a non-U.S. location to better support the regions that they're supporting? And really becoming a more global company each and every step of the way, right? So there's a lot of design work. There's a lot of things that might say there will be new jobs too. In some locations, but we don't want to start posting those until after all the decisions are made and after everybody knows what their status is. So that's the one watch out. The other one is to the degree, the second one to me is that when to the degree you can identify who's going to be impacted, and if depending on the size of your organization, can you coordinate where there's any growth or change in jobs that there's possible that you could find alternatives for those people that you're planning to let go before you're ready to tell them they're going to be let go. So in many cases, you know, we might have done some slating that allowed us to say, hey, this person's job's going away, but this new job that's being created is a good fit for them. So can we figure that out so that when we sit down with them, what we can say is you're being reassigned, not you're losing your job, but hey, here's good news, you know. So we try and think through how well can you match people up to minimize the impact to them. And then the third thing is understanding the impact of a potential voluntary approach. Can you do that? Can you afford to do that? And by that, I mean, you might have talent leave that you did not want to leave.
Yeah.
So it may make sense. You might think, hey, the easiest way to do this is voluntary. It's the least pain, but it can be very painful because if you lose some of the wrong talent or you exclude some people from being considered for the voluntary, you then have potential morale issues, right? Like all these people left and now I'm stuck with the work. And that kind of the subset of that third one to me is you need to really be clear about if you're reducing that work is going away as well. So I may be, let's say there's going to be a 10% reduction. I may be part of the 90% that's staying. But if that just means that that last 10% of work is being spread among the rest of us and I'm already feeling stressed, I'm not going to be happy about this news, right? That I got, that I still get to work here.
Yeah.
So really
I keep my job, but it's twice as hard.
Yeah. So really trying to be clear with people, what's changing besides just a reduction in people? Well, we're going to change the way we do things too. So that I think is an important part and really was a big part of the messaging in the last one that I went through.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about voluntary versus involuntary? And just how does that work?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things, and we spent a lot of time debating this before we decided to do voluntary this last time around. There's a concern in some of the bigger corporations that people just believe, well, every 8 to 10 years, there's a chance for me to take a voluntary departure, which in many cases has a benefit associated with it, right? So in some cases, if there's a company that still has a pension plan, they might allow people to take their pension a couple of years ahead of when they'd normally be eligible for full pension. Or they might add years of 5 years of service to the calculation or something like that to encourage people to make the choice. As we get to this era where pensions are fewer than they used to be or worth less because they froze them X years ago, those kind of things don't happen as much. So there's not as much of those kind of things. But if you're doing a voluntary, it's generally to help ease the pain. And in some cases, it's to help turn your organization a little bit. If there's people that are dissatisfied or have not been really happy with their job, and you're going to give them 3 months pay and outplacement services, they'd probably say, great, you know, I was going to go out on my own. Now I at least can have a few months of cushion and a good service to help me find a new job. And ideally, those employees know the market anyway, you know, and have an idea of how employable they are. So you get a chance to see help people who might not have stayed much longer anyway have a graceful exit and make room for people that were really committed to staying. On the downside of that, you might have a lot of senior talent leave, people who are close to retirement or were going to retire within the next year or two anyway. And so now you've paid extra for them to leave when they were going to leave anyway. So it's a costly step to take. But on the plus side of that is some of those people create greater opportunity for the other employees that are kind of in that mid-manager ranks. And it also means that for the next couple of years, you're less likely to have too much retirement outflow because you're just really advancing retirement for many people. Again, the size of the corporation matters, whether there's pension or not matters. Mm-hmm. And whether or not you want to draw out any groups and say, well, these groups will be excluded from consideration. You can do that legally. It's just that's when you get the situations where people who could have benefited pretty well from that now are disgruntled employees.
Right. You got fairness issues.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's tough. There's always going to be something. There's always going to be somebody who, if this were 1 month later, that I could do it. Or if this, you know, if I was going to turn 55 tomorrow, or the day after they close it, then I can't afford to do it, because age 55 for many people is a vesting age. There's all sorts of things, at least at our company, that would impact. So it's really tough when someone doesn't make those deadlines, you know, and they can't make the choice. But you know, it's just a very complicated situation, and you need to plan it out and not just think, oh, this is a really good way to do it, because there's so many things that could go wrong in terms of talent, and replenishment, and people who aren't really eligible to get a hold of that, who wish they could.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it would also be like a knowledge retention issue as well.
So now specifically getting into the change management aspect of this is that you have to start to think through what happens with that, when that goes on. So for example, I've led the last two of these, the two efforts, the healthcare effort and the strategy change effort that's just recently completed. And as part of that, I made that choice to leave, because we did have a voluntary. Well, part of the restriction that I had was, let's say we chose in February, and we told the employees the earliest day, you'll be told your release day, that could be as early as May, and it could be as late as December 31st. And the thing that would guide that would be, you know, how much do we need for you to do transition work between now and then? So I may have elected in February, yeah, I'm going to voluntarily leave. And in April, I would find out whether my date would be May, June, October, December, whatever. I knew that my date was December. Because
you were putting the days together.
Because I was putting the thing together. I was managing the project. And I had to, I was expected to leave a good paper trail, right? So really keep the filing system correct and updated, make sure that everybody from HR and legal were tied into all the different things that were going on. And so you have to, from a change management standpoint, have a really good knowledge transfer process in place. So we really worked up front with, again, when we announced our intent to do this voluntary approach, we also had a huge presentation for team leaders to say, here's what you need to be thinking about when we tell you that these three people on your team are all voluntarily leaving. You need to figure out what you need to do to transfer their work to somebody else, what you need to do to transfer their knowledge base within your organization. And you need to start working on with your manager, what's the new design under the new work plan, so you can determine whether or not you need to transfer other people into that organization, or whether some of that work's going to be transferred elsewhere in the organization. So really trying to help people understand well in advance that you're going to be faced with some difficult change management problems, and here's what you need to do about them.
Yeah. Okay. Were there any instances where there were teams that said, you know, I can't let go of more than two people, let's say, and then three of them want to leave and one of them has to say no?
Yeah, no, there was no. So one of the things that we committed to up front is twofold. Once you've elected to leave, you can't change your mind. And the other is we are committed to letting you go. So nobody could be, nobody would expect that their team leader is going to come back to them and say, look, I know you applied to leave, but we decided you can't, or, you know, why did you do that? You know, we were going to promote you next week or something like that. Right. So we really tried to make sure people didn't do anything stupid like that. But I think that in a case that you just described, there were two or three areas where we were hit pretty hard. One of the things that I was doing is we had about a three-week window where people could elect. We did it through a SharePoint site. And every day at 7 o'clock, I would review, you know, the last 24 hours activity and report back to all of HR, here's what's going on in your area. And, you know, in particular, hey, you over in this area, hey, you look like you have a higher percentage of your total employees. So I knew all the balances. I knew, you know, how many employees were in R&E in our family care business. So that when I could count the people who were selecting from that area and say, here's a percentage for you, right? So the HR people and every team knew exactly what the impacts were on a day-to-day basis. In a lot of cases like this, it's a big life decision. So most people don't make that choice until the last 3 or 4 days. So that's when it really becomes obvious where the issues are. And then the managers had 4 weeks from the time the election was done to determine how long I need to hold everybody. So we gave them plenty of room, plenty of information, so they knew what the impacts were. They knew the impact of supporting areas. So, you know, one group, let's say we have a testing group that does all the product testing, and the research and engineering group counts on them. Well, they need to know how many from that group are going to be impacted because the workflow might be impacted for a while we figure that out. So there was a lot of that need to kind of cross review with everybody. This team's got this many people. Their targeted date is June. How will that impact in your area, right? So we really spent a lot of time making sure that we minimize the impact of talent loss through good timing and then set processes for knowledge transfer and skill transfer.
Okay. So something else I'm curious about, because it seems like there'd be an element of guilt involved in being a change agent responsible for doing a layoff. And so I was wondering, did you ever feel that way? And, you know, what did you do about it? How did you get through that?
Yeah, so in the healthcare spinoff, I was probably where I was really faced with that. Because the biggest probably impact was in our IT organization. And as a organization design person, I had worked very closely with the IT organization. I knew them well. I understood their structure well. I had been to some of their primary locations many times and knew a lot of the individuals involved. So when it came time for them to go through their selection process, it was one of those parts of the organization that has been in-house for so long that anytime we started to make decisions to outsource anything, it was really challenging because this is very much a case where people say they're family. And in many cases, they literally are family, right? We have major location in Neenah, Wisconsin. Kimberly-Clark was for years the major employer there. So undoubtedly, you'd have spouses, brothers, sisters, all sorts of family connections. And so when you're going to make announcements of reductions, it's going to hit beyond the people that you told, yeah, for sure, that are still in the organization. So my biggest challenge there was actually recognizing that this was some of what was going to now be very different for people, that this IT organization, which at one time was very internal, is slowly, you know, moving and slowly bringing in new talent as well, instead of all the talent coming in from lower levels. So a lot of change, a lot of people who just feel so connected to their employment at Kimberly-Clark, to the people they work with. And so I committed to going there the day that actually took 3 days to make the notifications, because we'd opted to notify every employee about what their status would be, as opposed to just pulling in the people who were impacted. I believe, depending on the size of the reduction, that's one of the smartest things to do in retrospect, because it's unfortunate that what it means is everybody's waiting for their meeting and wondering what's my, but if they weren't scheduled for a meeting, then they wonder, does that mean I'm okay? You know, or do I have to wait for someone to tap on my shoulder and say, come on down the hall with me? So we felt that was the most caring way to do it. Say, hey, we're going to talk to everybody. And at that meeting, we're going to tell you whether your job's the same, whether your job's changed, or whether you're going to be leaving the company. And we planned it out very carefully, and I had to be in some of those meetings where it was someone leaving, and it was really hard. It was hard to, for the manager as well, because they knew the person so well. So that got tough. It was a pretty exhausting week. And, you know, I think at some point, if you've had to do a reduction, you do have that rationalization in mind that, and the company will be better for this. And yes, these are people, and yes, they've worked hard. And yeah, they probably had an intention of spending the rest of their career here. But, you know, that's not the way that the company will thrive. We really need to make sure we're doing the things that are best for the company and treat those people who are impacted with the greatest care and respect that we can.
Great. Thanks for sharing that. So if someone wants to learn more about either this topic or to connect with you, how would they do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you say that. I'm still thinking about what to do next. I left the job in December, spent a lot of time just kind of relaxing for a change. And that project was actually almost a 2-year-long project, so it was pretty exhausting. Yeah. But I'm starting to decide what to do next. And one of the things that I'd be more than happy to do is to consult a little bit on that, how people go about that. As well as any other major change that impacts employees. You know, I've been doing that kind of work for a long time now. And I'm available on LinkedIn. You can find me at Tim Gardner on LinkedIn and Facebook as well. I'm working on a new blog, but I don't really want to talk about it yet because I'm not sure when I'm going to get it out there. My old blog is the HR Introvert, and you can actually contact me through that site as well. I'll respond as soon as I can.
Great. Well, Tim, thanks so much for being here.
No problem, Heather. Thanks. As I said, it's good to talk to you again, even on a tough topic like this, but I think it's an important topic.
Yeah, I appreciate your perspective.
Okay.
Well, thank you for listening to the Influence Change at Work show. If you'd like to find more resources to help you influence change in your organization, including individual coaching, team workshops, and upcoming training events, please visit inclaria.com. And while you're there, be sure to download the free change readiness assessment to find out if your change initiative is set up for success. Until next time, best wishes on your change initiative.